Chinese lawmakers are yet to define brain death in legal terms. A defiant move by a district bureau of human resources in Fujian province has reopened the floor for more discussion, even debate, over the legal definition of death, which is deviating from the understanding by the medical professionals. So, Lai Ming, why is this discussion resurfacing now?
Well, this is a story about a woman under the alias Jiang Yuling. She's a hospital staff in Nanping City, Fujian Province. And very sadly, one day in May 2016, this woman fell ill at work and was pronounced brain dead the following day. Her family members insisted on giving her treatment in the hope of resuscitating her. However, a few days later, she died of heart and respiratory system failure. And since Jiang fell sick at her job, her family may be able to claim compensation for work-related death, but only if her death were recognized by the local authority on human resources as work-related. However, in September 2018, Nanping Municipal Bureau of Human Resources and Social Welfare in Fujian Province decided Jiang's death was not work-related, and this is the third time they've done so after losing two court cases against Jiang's family, who demanded revision to their assessment. Basically, Jiang's family would be able to claim compensation for work-related death if the local authority recognized her death as work-related. And here, and this authority has denied twice to recognize that. And therefore, they went to court, and this is the third time the authorities has refused to do so. And that's why we're talking about it now.
Yeah, and with this kind of case, we always discuss with a heavy heart. Because it's easy to think that maybe someone's kind of putting a price tag on death. But I don't necessarily think this is the lens that I would want to adopt when looking at such cases. Because when you look at the situation here in China, sometimes, you know, a lot of families they're really dependent on that one piece of salary, I suppose. And when a lady had gone through such situation, yes, it's just very, very difficult, I suppose, for the family to deal with this. And when it comes to compensation and also dealing with the trauma of the loss of one life, certainly not an ideal situation to be. Well, what are your thoughts on this, Carl, of this case?
I find this an interesting case because the thing that we don't know or hasn't been clear in the reporting is why she had brain death. So brain death is normally caused by things like a heart attack or a stroke or some other illness. And that's, I suppose, a really important bit of information sort of in my mind looking at it, because if a death's going to be work-related, yes, she got ill when she was at work, but that doesn't necessarily mean that work caused her to get ill. I could have a heart attack at work, but in Australia, for example, that doesn't mean work's responsible for me having a heart attack. Mm. If work puts me under so much stress I have a heart attack, then there's a case for compensation. But the fact that an accident happens just because you're at work doesn't automatically make
very interesting. Very, very interesting point. I suppose that's just the language of China's labor-related laws. I mean, certainly, maybe that was the case when the Chinese lawmakers wrote that law in the hope of protecting the rights of workers in this country. But what's interesting in this case is, interestingly, the language of laws on the protection of labor's rights may have been written in the sense to protect them in such extreme cases, like Carl just mentioned. But what's prevented local authorities from recognizing Jiang's death as qualify or mm-hmm. to get compensation is also the language of a law. I mean, Nanping Municipal Bureau of Human Resources and Social Welfare insisted Jiang's death was not work-related based on the legal definition of death. And under the current legal language in China, clinical death is pronounced upon the cessation of heartbeat.
Yeah.
Strictly speaking, brain death is not clinical death by law.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
So,
and,
on the one hand, you have generous laws protecting workers' rights, and as long as you fell ill at the workplace, then that injury can be counted as work-related injury. On the other hand, since the definition of death isn't defined or isn't up to date, that's why we have a case. That's why people are arguing about it.
Mm. And this is not just happening here in China about this debate on what constitutes death. Because here, we're looking at is it the death of the brain? So no brain activity at all. The right way to be categorized as death, or the stop of the heartbeat. So brain death or respiratory death, which one should be the legal definition of that cold word death? And that becomes something that countries around the world is debating about.
And there's been some really highly publicized cases in the United States, for example, over the last couple of decades, where the reality is that law has not kept up with medical technology. It's now possible to keep someone technically alive, if you want to use the definition of being alive as having a heartbeat and having circulation of blood, you can put someone on a respirator and keep them alive for a very long time, despite the fact that there's no chance that they're going to recover because their brain function has ended.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, this is something, well, I wonder if it's as simple as the law not being kept up to date, or there's just too many complications to it. I remember in, I think, April, in The Economist, they carried an article about this man. He was Orthodox Jew, and for religious reasons, they believe that life ends only when breath and heartbeat cease. But this man, who's a devout believer of Orthodox Judaism, he suffered from a asthma attack, and then his heart continued to beat 5 months after he was declared brain dead, and his family went through a arduous legal battle as well to keep him on life support, and simply the family's not willing to let go. So these are some fundamentals, I suppose. Almost people find it a little bit morbid to talk about, when actually I think if people can come up with like a good arrangement about death and understanding of it, it can be a lot more comforting than it turns out to be in these cases.
I suppose one thing it's probably worth going over is what constitutes brain death. So the definition of brain death in China and Australia are quite similar by the sound of it, and some of the process is similar. So you would put the person through a CAT scan, a CT scan, to see whether there's any brain activity going on. You can test whether they can breathe by themselves if you turn a respirator off. You can check their eyes to see if they react to light. You can do reflex tests or gag tests to see if there's sort of any activity going on. I think one of the differences between China and Australia, though, is that in Australia you have to have what we call brainstem death. So that's a definition that means that if your brainstem has died, you are unable to live off a respirator. And even on a respirator, you're not going to live very long. So without any activity in the brainstem, your body cannot remain alive. So it's a quite strict definition.
What, brainstem is the part of your brain that controls motion? So when you lose control on that part of your brain, then you can't move independently without a respiratory or respirator, is it? It's a machine that keeps you breathing.
Yeah, it's even more than that. If your brainstem dies, you can't breathe, your organs can't function. So eventually everything will shut down.
It'll gradually deteriorate and shut down.
But I think a lot of the legal controversies where the brainstem is still alive, the person mm-hmm. can still continue to be supported in hospital using machinery, but they're never going to recover because too much of their brain has actually died.
Yeah, and I think for the family members, it's very hard to take in and to agree when you see that the body of your loved one...
The rise and fall of someone's chest.
Yes, and outwardly, the person appears to be alive.
And when you feel it, you can still, when you touch them, you can still feel the warmth of this on the skin.
Exactly.
It makes it very hard for relatives to accept that they've lost their loved ones.
Or okay, here's my wishful thinking. We don't know how far that medical science has developed. I mean, is it possible that it's just beyond the understanding of where we are at currently in medicine, that maybe there is that glimmer of hope of a person that could, I wouldn't say necessarily return back to the perfectly cognitive functions, but still having a shred of sensibility, and it's just that we don't know. We're not advanced enough to know, and if we simply just say that this person is brain dead, therefore being defined as dead, then what about that kind of consequence?
I suppose I would stick up for the science of neuroscience, which I studied at university, mm-hmm. and say that the reality is that we do know beyond a certain point that someone is never going to come back. They're never going to not only not wake up, but they're never going to be able to breathe independently. So there is a point that people get to in brain death where there's no going back.
Or what about the senses? Or maybe this person is not completely gone, despite the fact that the organ is being determined as dead, called the brain.
And that's where we do get that tricky moral and ethical question. And how much should a person like that be supported to remain alive? How much should society invest resources? Because it's really expensive to keep someone alive in intensive care.
Yeah.
And I know we don't like to put a dollar value on human life, but that's what we do all the time. That's a reality. We don't have infinite resources.
And even in cases where family members are willing to spend money on keeping a loved one who's brain dead still alive, there are there's the argument that perhaps it is you're occupying too much of the resources within a specific medical institution, so much so that maybe other people who stand a chance at being resuscitated within the same facility may not have access to the same resources that you are that the patient is currently hogging, and therefore that's just unfair.
I think, and to extend, I suppose, that argument even further, and it's less about fairness, but one of the problems with not having a good definition for this is it goes beyond that individual person. So if you want to have organ transplantation, for example, you might have a donor ready, you might have a recipient ready, but at what point can the doctors agree, okay, we can take this person off life support, we can take their heart, their lungs, their kidneys, their liver, their corneas, use those to do good, use those to improve the life of somebody else. Doctors need to have a line where they know when they can do that.
But the trick is knowing where the line is. I mean, Carl just mentioned, in China, the diagnosis of brain death may go through a series of examinations like CT scan, apnea test, like gag test, eye examination to see if the pupils can react to light, and reflex tests to determine brainstem function. So we also take into account brainstem function, but that all these series of procedures can be hard to be... to conduct, perform, and also the results can be hard to analyze. And therefore, that's why at a 2017 lunch discussion in the Johns Hopkins Hospital, anesthesiologist and critical care specialist Robert Stevens said, "The line between life and death, once clearly perceptible in the form of a beating heart, is now sometimes harder to see because of advances in life-saving technologies." Yeah. This is particularly so. Well, Johns Hopkins University is offering that service to nearby hospitals. They send staff over to help the hospital staff to determine whether someone is brain dead or not. Even in advanced countries like the United States of America, we need professional expertise to determine whether someone is brain dead or not. Then I can imagine how challenging it is for a local or regional hospital, say in my hometown. The regional hospital, the doctors there, they failed to diagnose bronchitis from a different kind of disease which my grandma was suffering. And she didn't know until she came to Beijing to receive the right diagnosis. So for something as easy as bronchitis, they could mess up. And then what about brain death? I mean, this is life and death. What if you, the patient or the doctor in my county hospital misdiagnoses someone that's in a vegetative state, someone that's hopeful, that can be revived with efforts devoted. And what if they misdiagnose that as brain death? And then, well, that's just sad.
And Liming, you're absolutely right, because there's already a few cases that is related to this issue that surfaced, and it is a really difficult one to determine, and certainly this is one of the things that we're sort of waiting for the law to... do you think that this should be possibly altered in the law, or should we play it safe and stay where we are at right now? That is, you know, by looking at the heartbeat and determine what is life or death.
Unfortunately, I don't think I possess the necessary expertise and knowledge to make a decision on that. Although in clinical practices, doctors are proclaiming brain death patients. And also in certain countries. I mean, there are countries, I think there are 13 countries in the world that recognize brain death as the legal definition of death, whereas there are also other countries who sort of make a compromise. Sort of they would acknowledge someone is brain death, but they would not go so far as to sort of legalize brain death as the, well, legal definition of death.
I suppose I would defend the Australian definition, because it is really, really strict, and it doesn't leave a lot of room for error, because if you take someone off a respirator and their heart stops beating because they're brain dead, that's as clear a sign as any. And again, I come back to the importance of, I suppose, two issues. One is the issue, like I said, of organ donation, which I think is really, really important. And to do that, to support people to have extended lives through organ donations, there has to be a good definition of when you can take somebody else's organs. And I think it's also a good discussion to have so that families can get some surety, because it might be reassuring for someone to be told, it's okay, we'll keep them on a respirator, we'll keep treating them, and we'll see what happens. But there does come a point where doctors need to be able to draw a line and say to a family, your family member is never going to come back. They're never going to regain consciousness. And in the case of brain death, they're never going to leave that bed, because they're not able to breathe on their own. Their organs aren't able to function.
And I also would like to go back to the story that we shared at the very beginning of our show, the story about this woman named Jiang Yuling. So her case, it was a little more complicated in the sense that although she was not recognized as death because she was brain dead, but her case or her family's claim to compensation also falls on an important criteria, that is the question of timing. So in China, when someone is well, when someone falls ill at workplace, and if they die within 48 hours of that incident, then they can be counted as work-related death, and their family members can lay claim to compensations. The case with Jiang's is that although she's been pronounced brain dead the following day after she fell ill, she her family's efforts to sort of to resuscitate her kept her alive for a couple of more days. Therefore, her heartbeat ceased more than 48 hours after she fell sick at workplace. And so I'm thinking maybe we don't have to have a clear definition, or we don't have to draw a line. We don't have to say that brain death, we don't have to recognize brain death as the legal definition of death. What we have to do is perhaps make an exception for patients who are pronounced brain death, perhaps extend the time of 48 hours longer than that. Perhaps we make exceptions for brain death patients to sort of, as long as you are pronounced brain death within 48 hours of falling sick at workplace, mm-hmm. then your family can lay claim to compensation according to the law.
Yeah.
Which, again, I don't know, I sound like a broken record, but going back to the case of organ donation, that's not a bad move, because the reality is you might not be able to find a recipient of the organs in time. So there are good reasons why you might keep someone alive. Well, you might keep someone breathing longer than 48 hours because they can go off and donate their organs.
Yeah, and I would think that all of that needs to be decided earlier on when a person is fully lucid. Because in our country, if you want to join the organ donation program, for example, that is something that should be decided before all of this happens, as, nobody's taking anything that you possess without your authority, kind of thing. But yes, talking about life and death, something that reoccurs on roundtables, some of the really difficult topics to touch upon, but possibly spur some thought for you. You're listening to Roundtable,